Hello everyone and welcome to the penultimate episode of Season 1, The Problem with Electricity. And believe me, this is arguably one of the most blatant episodes in terms of looking at this whole thing through a lens of murder, not suicide, that we'll hear throughout the entire series. And you'd be well within your right to say, hold on, surely the episode that covered how many auto-erotic asphyxiation deaths there were in a short period, that should be, well, the pièce de la résistance of looking at this through a lens of murder. Well, no, not quite. It was very close, it was a close call. But today's episode is something that needs to literally be heard to be believed. Now, remember, on this podcast, for both legal and moral reasons, we're not assuming that these people didn't take their own lives or that there's any sort of suicidal ideation or tragedy involved, of course, with the families of these horrific events. What we are doing is playing an almost historical fiction narrative of reframing that lens to say, what if these weren't suicides? What if they were assassinations carried out to look like suicides? But I must caveat those two sentences by saying there is a valid reason why we're doing so. We're not cosplaying, or I use the phrase historical fiction there, we're not creating a narrative. Everything you've heard so far in terms of facts have been facts. It's when the facts don't add up that you have a podcast like this. You say, okay, let's look at the other side of the coin. Why else would these people be dying, if not by suicide? And it turns out the deeper you dig, the more the suicide narrative seems much more questionable. We look at how people kill themselves, and what we find in all of the cases we've looked at, all to a single individual, are very, very rare ways of killing yourself. I would even understand it slightly more if, when you look at these series of scientists who have allegedly killed themselves, that there was the odd usual suicide in there. And when I say usual suicide, yes, we all know what they are. We've all probably known someone who sadly has took their own life. None of them in this way. None of them in the ways we've discussed. And most certainly not in the way we're about to discuss. Next week, in our conclusion finale, we'll try and summarise everything we've covered over 10 episodes. Basically, a synopsis, we'll revisit a few things, we'll look at that timeline in a condensed fashion. But there is a specific reason why the problems with electricity, this episode, is so late in the series, and that's because of how extraordinary these deaths are. Also, the proximity of the deaths. Deaths that we've initially labelled suicides, but have then proven to be physically impossible. And I don't mean with your body, I mean beyond the laws of physics. Next week's finale will be statistic heavy, whilst we try to point out just how unrealistic it is, the narrative that all of these scientists kill themselves. And believe me, some of the statistics make for shocking reading. Some of the statistics we'll use today will make for shocking reading. And I promise you there is no pun intended in that. But before we thank our Patreons, a quick mention on Season 2, which will be upcoming on Tuesday the 17th of September. So mark that note in your diary. And again, similar to this season, which is how we're going to run True Crime Tuesday, we're going to focus on one thing for the entire season. It just allows us to dip in and out more often than, say, an individual case. I appreciate there's places for both in the podcasting world, but this is how we're going to do True Crime Tuesday. So, Season 2 will be called False Flags. And for those unfamiliar with the term false flag, I'll read you the definition in Wikipedia. A false flag operation is an act committed with the intent of disguising the actual source of responsibility and pinning the blame on the other party. The term today extends to include countries that organise attacks on themselves and make the attacks appear to be by enemy nations, or terrorists, therefore giving the nation that was supposedly attacked a pretext for domestic retaliation, or foreign military aggression. So for season two, we're going to focus on only the proven false flags that have taken place throughout history. And you may well be thinking, well, where is the crime? But the crime itself lies in the manipulation and in the lies. And we will cover this in season two. But for example, let's just say your government knowingly set up an event that would make you eager to go and retaliate against the nation. Okay? They've got you on side to go and murder innocent people who had nothing to do with that attack. Now, surely, somewhere within that is a crime. Would we not agree? In terms of right and wrong, good and evil, lying under oath is a crime, but it's taken place under some false flags. And we do, as a species, especially as a wanting to be a democratic species, we believe if the government we voted into power say something, then it's true. If a president or a prime minister tells you a piece of information about a war, for example, we take that as gospel. But when we look at the things we're going to look at in season two, you will see, arguably, the very last people you want to take at their word, unsurprisingly, are politicians. Also, what is the most abhorrent thing about a false flag operation is they have almost tacitly got you on board for them to go and commit murder on innocent civilians. And you will back it up. You'll support the troops. Because the leader of your country has looked down a camera lens straight into your eyes and said, we will not bend to terrorism, we will not bend to being threatened, and we're going to send a force over there, and you've almost jumped out your chair in patriotism. And so you should. You should be patriotic. Here's the thing. What if that person looking down the lens at you is telling you an out-and-out lie? You, unknowingly, are now supporting murder. And that is where the crime comes in regards to this show being called True Crime Tuesday. And I want none of you to get the wrong impression that this is now going to turn into a conspiratorial show. It is absolutely not. Every episode that we will cover on false flags in season two will be verified and will be authenticated as a known false flag, be that through released CIA documents or whatever other means. There will be zero conspiracy, 100% fact, and yes, we may theorise, but that's allowed within the discourse of conversing about these events. But there will be no conspiracy. I need to make that clear. We will be dealing with crime, not conspiracy. And it's also going to be very interesting to see what governments do when a false flag operation is pointed out to them as pure fact. You would imagine, or you would hope, that moralistically, they would turn round and say, well, we need to gather the people responsible for this lie together because they've cost people their lives. Do we think that happened? Let's leave it there for now. But on Tuesday, the 17th of September, we are going to take a deep dive into false flag operations, all proven true. And believe me, you won't want to miss it. So if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button and be the first to hear when we begin season two. And finally, a big shout out to our wonderful team over at Patreon, our little crime club over there. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And if you want to join our crime club, head over to patreon.com/crimetuesday. That's /crimetuesday. And when you join, Not only do you receive these episodes both ad-free and before everyone else, you can also gain exclusive access to the Patreon-only podcast, Cold Case. And Cold Case does exactly what it says on the tin. We take a look at some of the most famous and infamous unsolved murders and crimes from throughout history. Most recently, on Sunday, we covered the Gregory Affair, one of France's most disturbing, horrific, and outright unbelievable cases of unsolved murder. So if early ad-free access and access to a Patreon-only podcast sounds like your thing, head over to patreon.com/crimetuesday. But right now, we're going to look at two particular suicides, or things that were initially labelled suicide, that, in my eyes, could not have been done by the individual themselves. So please, join me. My name's Kevin Eustace, this is True Crime Tuesday, and this is The Problem with Electricity. We'll begin today's episode with me reading a transcript of a radio broadcast for a news show for a London radio show. It was by John Cookson, and he said, "The electrocution of 60-year-old Marconi employee, John Ferry, has again sparked conspiracy theories as he is the sixth employee working on a top-secret project who has died in suspicious circumstances. Editor of Electronics Weekly, Mick Elliott, says the gruesome of the apparent suicide suggests that the deceased were trying to draw attention to something sinister. Journalist Duncan Campbell agrees and says it seems rather more than a coincidence." That news report on the radio was read out in the weeks following the death of John Ferry. So let's take a look at what happened with John Ferry. Well, John was a 60-year-old assistant marketing director for Marconi. His mysterious death sparked numerous conspiracy theories and speculation since his body was discovered in August 88. John Ferry was found dead in an apartment. Not any apartment, though. This apartment was owned by Marconi. And how did he die? Well, he stripped leads of an electrical cord. He placed them to the fillings in his mouth and then turned on the main supply. This tragic, bizarre, and ultimately weird incident left investigators puzzled and fueled speculation about potential foul play. So let's take a peek at John's background and see if there's anything that jumps out other than just working for Marconi. John Ferry had a long and respectable career at Marconi. He was a British defence contractor specialising in advanced electronics and communication systems, Bell One. At the time of his death, Marconi was embroiled in several high-profile defence projects, some of which were shrouded in secrecy due to their sensitive nature. Bell Number 2. So in August 88, in the preceding days, John Ferry was reportedly seen behaving unusually. Colleagues described him as stressed and withdrawn, although there were no clear immediate signs anything was amiss in his professional life. But Ferry had been working on several significant projects at Marconi. Though the specifics of these projects still remain classified, some speculate that the pressure of his work, combined with possible external threats, may have contributed to his state of mind. His body was found on August the 22nd, 88. He was found, as we say, in a Marconi-owned apartment in central London. Discovered by a company colleague who'd become concerned after Ferry failed to show up to work or respond to calls. The scene was described as chilling. Ferry was found sitting in an armchair with the stripped leads of an electrical cord inserted into his dental fillings in his mouth. The cord was then plugged into an electrical outlet, leading to the immediate assumption he'd electrocuted himself. But before we move on, Here's a quick question. Picture that scenario. You, for whatever reason, have decided to take your own life. Again, like everyone else we've discovered, they've not chosen a normal route. Instead, you've decided to peel a flex off a wire, attach those metal bare wires to your dental fillings, and then walk over to the plug it in, and switch it on. Now, here's the problem. He was found in an armchair. I'm pretty sure that the electrical shock when you switch on the switch would be instantaneous. If so, they would have found John crumpled mere meters, if that, away from that plug socket. But no, they found him sat down. And before anyone says he may have used a breaker, he may have used an extension lead, there is no mention of that at all in any of the findings. So we're led to believe that somehow John has the power to control when electricity will flow and decided to wait until he was comfy in his chair to give the nod to the plug and let the electricity flow. Believable, isn't it? No, it's not. Of course, the colleague who found him immediately phoned the police and they came to the scene and an initial examination was concluded. Though the circumstances were bizarre enough to warrant an immediate investigation, they initially leaned towards suicide. Forensics were brought in to analyse the scene, and they noted the unusual nature of the setup, which didn't fit in with a typical suicide. The positioning of the body and the electrical cord itself raised questions about how Ferry could have inflicted this injury on himself. It took until the following month before an autopsy was carried out. And the autopsy proved that the cause of death, as we knew, was confirmed as electrocution. But it did state there were no signs of a struggle or physical assault. They carried out a toxicology report, but that was inconclusive. There were no drugs nor alcohol in his system that could have impaired his judgment or led to an accidental death. As the investigation progressed, some detectives did explore the possibility of foul play. Given Ferry's position at Marconi and the sensitive nature of his work that we still don't know about today, therefore, there was concern amongst very few investigators that he may have been targeted. However, there was no immediate evidence of forced entry or a struggle, and the apartment was in order. There were no signs anyone else had been present. Well, that's a surprise, isn't it, really? No, it's not. If you're an assassin, are you trained to leave as you found it, or are you meant to trash the place to prove you've been there? Especially when suiciding someone. In addition, no forced entry goes out the window when the apartment is owned by Marconi. Do you think they had one key? Interestingly, in October of that year, a small but brave vocal group argued that Ferry had discovered something critical in his work. Something that, once he discovered it, immediately made him a target for elimination. Though they don't quote, by whom. This theory gained traction due to the high number of unusual deaths that we've covered in the last few episodes. In early 89, an inquest was carried out. And the inquest into Ferry's death was held with the coroner unable to definitively rule out foul play. Therefore, the official verdict was left open. The coroner recorded an open verdict due to the unexplained and suspicious nature of the circumstances. Despite the inquest's inconclusive findings, the case was closed by the police. No action was taken, and Ferry's death was officially recorded as undetermined. Now, I don't know about you, but it terrifies the life out of me that one of my loved ones could have something similar happen to them, and the court system, the legal system, the police could say, Yes, this could be suspicious. We're not sure how. So what we're going to do is do nothing. We're going to expect you to move on with your life. He's gone. Carry on. What? I'm sorry, but that smacks of somebody from a higher authority saying, close this case. Take it off the records. It's no longer under investigation. And this is something we've seen repeated in the deaths we've covered so far. The police arrive at an alleged suicide scene, and they know automatically this is not your typical suicide scene. There are things which don't add up. They compile their findings, they go to a coroner. At best, they give what John had, which is an open verdict. And then the police are asked to close the case. And they do. And I wonder what those officers who arrived and realised this is not normal. I wonder what they feel like when their commanding officer says, we're not going to investigate this any further, the case is closed. Cause of death? Unidentified. Sorry, but surely as part of your role within the police is to investigate the things other people find unidentifiable. Like burglars. Like murderers. Like how somebody could plug themselves into the electricity mains and then walk, being electrocuted, to sit comfortably in a chair. That should be investigated, no? Apparently not. The boss says no. We close the case. Imagine that conversation with the individual's family. We've no idea how they died, I'm sorry. Oh, so you're going to look into it then? No. We're just going to close the case. Why? Well, we were told to. We need to be more vigilant about the information we're being told to swallow. Now, let's get a bit into the stats of this, okay? So, estimates suggest that suicide by electrocution counts for less than 1% of all suicide cases. In fact, most data on suicides globally or in specific countries typically do not even list electrocution as a separate category due to its rarity. Instead, they lump it into one called other methods. So, basically, the odds that you hear of a suicide and it being due to self-inflicted electrocution are less than 1 in 100. So it's pretty strange that this Marconi scientist working on top secret stuff would choose a method of suicide that falls under the 1% category of how people kill themselves, don't you think? So therefore, for argument's sake, what would be the odds of two scientists, both working on defense secret initiatives, killing themselves via electrocution in that same month? Well, if you calculate the odds of two scientists in the same field committing suicide in the same month and year, it's rather complex. It requires considering multiple factors: the base rate of suicide in the population, the rarity of their method, like electrocution, under 1%, and the demographic. For example, are they both scientists working on top secret defense initiatives? Yes, they are. Well, we can outline the general approach to understand how rare the event of two people in the same month, in the same industry, committing suicide in that way quite easily. We look at the base suicide rate, and the general suicide rate varies by country and population, obviously. For instance, in Western countries, the annual suicide rate is roughly 10 to 15 people per 100,000. Then we look at the suicide rate amongst scientists. The suicide rate for scientists or engineers specifically will differ from the general population. Some studies have suggested that high-stress professions might have slightly higher rates, but when it's been checked, they fall within the same range. And then we have the rare method, electrocution. As discussed, it accounts for less than 1% of suicides. Then we look at the timing and connection. and this is where it gets very freaky. So the likelihood of two scientists in the same field dying by suicide in the same month and year, especially by such a rare method, would be exceptionally low. It's not just a matter of statistical improbability. The timing, method, all of that raise questions about external factors. So to try and approximate these odds, you consider the base rate, the rare method, and the likelihood of two individuals in the same field choosing to die in this same method. Given these factors, the odds are so low. They're less than one in several million to be by chance, especially when accounting for the specific method and timing. The rarity of this occurrence would naturally lead to suspicion of a broader pattern beyond mere coincidence. So anyone with a basic grasp on numbers can see that the odds are astronomically low for these two suicides to occur purely by chance. The statistical improbability, and that's how low the chances are, we've moved from statistical probability to improbability, suggests that the two deaths of the two men in this way in the same month under suspicious circumstances would be seen as highly unusual and potentially indicative of other underlying causes, rather than two independent suicides. The same as the car deaths, the same as the autoerotic asphyxiation deaths. If we take these statistics as a whole, especially when we consider that the individual stats themselves are millions to one, we're basically talking billions to one that the narrative we've been told is real. You see, in the same month John Ferry magically electrocuted himself from a sitting position, Alistair Beckham, a 50-year-old software engineer employed by Plessy, who we know have links with Marconi, was found lifeless in his garden shed at his home, electrical wires tightly wrapped around his chest. His death was initially ruled a suicide. However, the circumstances around the case left many questions unanswered. In early August 88, Alistair was, by all accounts, living a routine life. Colleagues and family reported no unusual behaviour in the weeks leading up to his death. He was engaged in his work at Plessy, which involved highly sensitive projects, though the specifics of his assignments remain largely undisclosed due to the confidential nature of his work. On August the 18th, Alistair's lifeless body was discovered in the garden shed. He had stripped an electrical wire burr, wrapped it around his chest, and connected it to a live main. This setup suggests a high degree of technical knowledge, but everyone who witnessed him raised questions about the method he'd chosen to take his own life. On August the 19th, following the discovery of the body, the police launched an investigation into the circumstances of his death. The report shown that no suicide note was found at the scene, which isn't as unusual as people think, but that mixed with the bizarre way he chose to take his own life raised more than a few eyebrows. And the officers on site all believed there was a strong possibility of foul play. But once more, the coroner's office decided we can't find out what's took place here. Let's have an open verdict. The official narrative went along the lines of an absence of any clear motive for suicide, coupled with the complex and painful method of death. Well, an open verdict would leave the door open for alternative theories. Not that we'd investigate any further. Because, again, they were told to not investigate any further. And in fact, in the years since, the police and anyone who... the official stance has decided to lean towards suicide. The lack of concrete evidence and the unusual circumstances surrounding his death, they still keep the possibility of foul play alive, for me at least. But before we go, a final mention that in both of these deaths, accidental death was sincerely looked at as a serious cause of the death. Accidental. Because they are things you could do by accident. And yes, I hope you picked up the inflected sarcasm there. Anyway, I will let you all go. Thank you for joining me on another True Crime Tuesday. And, of course, join me next week for our season finale, where we will wrap all of this up in probably a very untidy bow. But until then, stay safe and take care.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now.
Save big.